So should we kick off?
Let's do it. All right.
Hi, everybody. I'm joined here today by Eric Yonash, who's an old friend of both Brian and mine, who works at the MD Anderson Cancer Center. And he's a terrific medical oncologist. I remember, Eric, you doing some great work back with bevacizumab and then some sequencing work and all sorts, and then some terrific biology stuff, which I was always really impressed with. Normally, I always ask you to introduce yourself, but I've kind of done a little bit of that for you today. But maybe you'd like to do that anyway and talk a little bit about your abstract, and we might kind of ask you some questions if that's okay.
Yeah, thanks, Tom and Brian. And as you've pointed out, I'm a professor of medicine at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. And one of the hats I wear is I run the hereditary GU clinic here. And I also have a von Hippel-Lindau disease clinic. This is a rare disorder. It affects about 1 in 35,000 live births around the world per year and results in pleiotropic manifestations. These individuals will get multifocal bilateral clear cell kidney cancers, but they will also get hemangioblastomas in the eye, in the spine, and in the brain. And they'll also get pheochromocytomas, as well as tumors and cysts in the pancreas. This population really has a huge unmet need, and this trial is about treatment of these patients.
So, Eric, this first of all, congratulations for doing a trial in VHL. I know it's not easy. As you say, the biology is compelling and it's important. So this was with, I guess, what used to be Peloton's HIF inhibitor, correct?
That's correct.
And just give us sort of a high-level results, number of patients, sort of what was seen, response rate, things like that.
Yeah, so this is a 61-patient study, and it's using this HIF-2 alpha inhibitor, which biologically makes a lot of sense when you have a mutation in VHL. VHL is supposed to regulate HIF levels, and if you have broken VHL, you have too much HIF. And so this drug, it's a small molecule that actually blocks HIF-2 alpha. We gave this, it's an oral agent, to 61 individuals with genetically confirmed hereditary von Hippel-Lindau disease and at least one renal cell carcinoma. And the primary objective really was to see shrinkage, objective response rate in the kidney. And we did see a 27.9% objective response rate confirmed, plus an additional 13% unconfirmed response rate. So we've definitely met objectives from a renal cell carcinoma shrinkage perspective.
And how many, I think I remember from the abstract, so that response rate is going to be in the 30 to 40% range probably by the time it sorts out. How about the tumor shrinkage? As I remember, most people had some tumor shrinkage.
Yeah, close to 90% of individuals had some degree of tumor shrinkage. And what's really cool about this drug and what we've seen also in individuals with metastatic renal cell carcinoma is that this is unlike the TKIs like sunitinib and pazopanib and cabozantinib, where you have this initial improvement and then sort of a tailoring off and a stabilization. What we're seeing with this drug is we're seeing a continued scan after scan, slight further improvement. So already with the follow-up we have, things are good, but we expect them to get even better.
Eric, how many relapses have you seen, and under what circumstances have they occurred?
So the question was, how many relapses have we seen? We haven't seen any so far. There was one individual where there was a slight increase and then decrease when the patient actually was off drug for a little bit. But nobody has really come off for a confirmed.
And what's the median follow-up?
The median follow-up at this point in time is 36 weeks.
Okay.
So about 9 months. So all of the patients who've had shrinkage have maintained that shrinkage after about 9 months. Is that?
And, Eric, give me a quick summary of the VEGF data, and I wouldn't mind, if possible, a hypothesis why the two might be different, why HIF might be behaving differently from VEGF in this environment.
So we published a paper in Lancet Oncology a couple of years ago looking at pazopanib, which is a small molecule inhibitor of VEGF and a number of other things, VEGF receptor and a number of other things. We actually saw a greater than 50% objective response rate in the kidneys in those individuals. With a little bit more of a follow-up, I wouldn't say that it's actually superior to this. One of the compelling findings in this trial is the toxicity really is actually quite manageable and quite mild. We're seeing anemia, which is an on-target side effect because EPO is a HIF-2 alpha client gene. So this is expected. It responds very nicely to erythropoietin. We had a small number of individuals who required transfusion, a small number of individuals who required EPO. So this is a drug that will result in control of disease growth and shrinkage in the kidneys, and also is something that a patient, VHL patients are, yes, they have this, they have these syndromes, but they're generally fairly well people. And what they need is they need a drug that doesn't actually really prevent them from being well.
Did you guys see hypoxia like's been seen in the sporadic RCC?
We've seen a few episodes of asymptomatic decrease in oxygen saturation, which, and there seems to be some tachyphylaxis over that, but nobody needed to come off a drug because of it.
Okay.
Eric, what's the outcome of patients with VHL and clear cell renal cancer? How many develop metastatic disease? Does it have as aggressive a biology as the other other patients with clear cell renal cancer?
They're generally comparable to other renal cell carcinomas, but important here, Tom, is that we're actually catching the renal cell carcinomas early in these individuals because they undergo lifelong surveillance. The majority of individuals will know that they have this from a very early age because they'll have familial antecedents, they'll have undergone testing, they'll undergo imaging. So we can follow these tumors. They grow at around 4 millimeters per year, and then operation will occur before they reach 3 centimeters. If they're less than 3 centimeters in size, the likelihood of metastasizing is extremely low. So metastasis is rare, but worsening renal deficiency over time, potentially losing their kidneys at some point in time, is a real problem.
So that leads to my next question is, so this, there's obvious activity here. It's tolerated. As you say, these patients are otherwise asymptomatic, generally young and healthy. How does this drug go from this trial to getting registered in this disease? Is this enough data, or, and I know you're not with the FDA, but if you had to design a trial that was for registration, would it be preservation of renal function? Is that the right endpoint, or how do you do that?
So because of the fact that tumor growth is a very good surrogate, or tumor size and change in tumor size is a very good surrogate for morbidity or eventual mortality, because if you keep the tumors below a certain size, you're going to be helping these individuals out. So I would say a very reasonable surrogate is durable response.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do these kidney tumors shrink in these individuals, but one of the things that we have not seen to a significant degree before in any of the other studies, I've published studies with sunitinib as well as pazopanib in this patient population, is that we're seeing some shrinkage in hemangioblastomas as well.
Yeah,
and, this is unprecedented. More formal review of this is going to come out in future congresses. But in terms of the overall package from a standpoint of managing VHL-related lesions, this is somewhat unprecedented. So this trial has potential registrational design with regard to how it was created together with the FDA. My hope as an advocate for these patients would be this would be sufficient, and that follow-on studies would be randomized, but not for individuals who have lesions that are potentially threatening, but maybe more from a preventative perspective. So this trial hopefully will be enough. And maybe we need to have some sort of a follow-on confirmatory study, but randomizing at this point in time with the quality of the data we have, there may be some ethical challenges.
Right. Well, and you can certainly imagine, you know, some sort of accelerated approval. I mean, sunitinib got its initial approval was accelerated based on a 40% response rate, right? So it's somewhat analogous to an era where there's really nothing that's approved, right, for these patients. There's nothing therapeutically approved. So as you say, an initial response rate and durability, I would hope is good enough. I guess we'll find out. One more comment about the hemangioblastomas. I don't know if you have numbers to share, but correct me if I'm wrong, I don't see a lot of these patients. The morbidity of those surgeries is probably more than the partial nephrectomies are, right? I mean, that the morbidity from those surgeries would be a bigger issue.
Yeah, in 2020, the mortality from von Hippel-Lindau disease is now driven more by the hemangioblastomas than by the renal cell carcinomas, just by virtue of the fact that some of these individuals literally have had over a dozen surgeries to their brain and to their spine. And there's only so many times you can do that before you start running into complications.
Eric, what do we learn about the biology of renal cancer? by looking at the gene expression of the VHL-driven tumors compared to those that are not VHL-driven?
Yeah, so hard to tell. I mean, all of these are VHL-driven tumors in these patients, obviously. So what it does provide is it provides us some sort of a central hypothesis that if you have a VHL mutation-driven or a HIF-driven tumor and you block HIF, you may have a salutary effect. So I think that is a hypothesis that's being tested in this patient population and demonstrates that that is actually true. I think what's a very interesting question, Tom, is now when we look at this orthogonally, let's say you have pheochromocytomas or pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors and other syndromes that are not VHL disease driven, but will you now have similar type of biology in those where you're actually going to see benefit as well? And that's actually a really interesting question that we hope to explore.
Do you know anything? Have you looked at, you know, tumors that shrank more versus less? I mean, are there clinical characteristics? Does type of VHL mutation matter? I'm not sure if you've gotten down to that level yet, but just curious.
Brian, excellent questions. And that's the subject to ongoing review. And these are the types of questions that we really need to answer.
Yeah.
So we don't know the answer to why it doesn't work in everyone. We do know that biology is somewhat unifying. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a very correct statement, Tom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think this is fascinating. You know, I mean, I think in terms of like, you know, advances at ASCO that are practice changing, I put this up there, you know, because again, the biology is so compelling, the molecule is so clean, it's so well tolerated. And I think the ability to impact patients is great, right? If it really can, you know, if it can get approved and work, the ability to make these patients' lives better, I think is tremendous.
Yeah, this is an absolute game changer for individuals with VHL disease.
Good.
Isn't that extraordinary? Good for you, Eric.
I liked ending on that quote, a game changer.
it's actually one of the best podcasts we've done.
Yeah.
the last one, we had a helicopter going past. We've had dogs in the background. This one was fantastic, Eric. You should be congratulated.
I told the boats and the helicopters to stay away.
Yeah. This is great. Congratulations again. It's a great study.
Thank you.
And Eric, we'll see you soon. Okay. We're looking forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, be safe. And
yeah, you too.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks.
Great chat. Bye-bye.